to Hero Hype, Hyperball's podcast for all of your superhero needs. And today we're going to be running down through all of the news from the last 2 weeks, and there is a lot of news, mostly DC TV, because they're really ramping up everything in the lead up to their shows coming back. But yeah, very, very exciting stuff to come up. As always, if you want to get hold of us at any point regarding our episodes or feedback or whatever, you can get hold of us on Hero Hype Podcast on Twitter. Or if you can't contain your excitement or your feelings to 140 characters, you can email us at herohypepodcast@gmail.com as well. And who do I mean by us? I mean myself. I'm Danya, and I am yet again joined by Caitlin.
Hello.
Yay! So, we have a lot to get through, so let's get right down to it with our brief history for this week. So today I'll be telling you all about Red Tornado. Now, Red Tornado is an android who was created by Professor T.O. Morrow. The Tornado Champion came upon the Professor as he was creating Red Tornado and assumed control of the android in order to infiltrate and defeat the Justice Society of America. When they merged, Tornado Champion's memories were erased and Red Tornado remained in control of their artificial body. Believing himself to be an original Justice Society of America associate, Red Tornado visited their headquarters to announce his return to duty. Though they were a little dubious, the Justice Society of America allowed him to accompany them on some missions. Morrow constructed a series of mishaps that framed Red Tornado as killing several Justice Society of America members. Red Tornado then tracked Morrow to his lair and appeared to defeat him. When the remaining members of the Justice Society of America joined him, they were caught in a trap and defeated. Morrow then traveled to Earth 1 to defeat the Justice League of America, but Red Tornado followed him and revived them. Together, the Justice League of America and Red Tornado defeated Morrow and uncovered a way to revive the Justice Society of America and return Red Tornado to Earth 2. Morrow confessed that Red Tornado was his creation, but the Justice Society of America still admitted him as a member, and he continued to fight alongside them.
And why are we bringing up Red Tornado? Well, because he's been cast for Supergirl! So it seems like they're doing something perhaps interesting with this character for Supergirl. We got the casting that Ido Goldberg will play, and the character description was written, Dr. T.O. Morrow, a.k.a. Red Tornado, which, as Danya noted, they are not the same character. So it's interesting that the casting would show them being the same person. The description reads, Red Tornado is the most advanced android the world has ever seen, designed by scientist T.O. Morrow for the U.S. Army as the ultimate superweapon. He soon becomes sentient, posing a grave danger to National City, including the people Supergirl cares about most. So I'm not sure what's going on here, making them the same character, but that does seem interesting. Do you have any theories, Danya?
I don't have any theories. I found it very, very interesting that they're just going to be combining them together, apparently. I think it's probably going to be in the interests of streamlining the story down a little bit and not having to introduce too many characters into a universe that's just starting out. So I think it's just going to streamline the story down a little bit and make it a little bit easier for them to navigate. And I guess combining them isn't completely out of the realms of possibility. They could do something akin to, Morrow giving himself android upgrades or something like that in order to kind of make him more powerful to, achieve the ends of whatever he's after. We don't know quite yet what he wants to do or what he's going to be up to in the series. So, you know, that's the direction I think they'll probably go in, and it's likely just to create a slicker storyline for TV, because it's all well and good having these multiple characters in comic books because, you know, they can come and go and cross over into multiple titles and you can just show little bits and pieces of them, flashes of them, and have them come, like, drop in and out. But in a TV show, it really, really helps to solidify those characters and have them around a lot more often. So I guess having too many adversaries and villains and trying to kind of expand the universe too quickly would get a little bit confusing for people, particularly more general audiences, I think, rather than people who would, I guess, listen to podcasts about all of these shows, who admittedly would be a little bit better of keeping track of multiple characters. So, yeah, I guess in my head, that's probably why they're doing this.
Yeah, I guess it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic works, since there's kind of an oppositional force between Red Tornado and his maker, you know, one ending up being on the hero side and one being a villain. So we're going to have to see where they take it, but it'll be interesting. Red Tornado's never been in live action, so they're continuing this whole bringing in characters that have never been in live action that we've only seen animated. So that's exciting. So it's not just the boring same characters we've always seen. So that's a positive, at least.
Yeah, it's really interesting because he has been in Young Justice. As you said, he's been an animated character previously, not in live action. And the thing with Red Tornado is he's such a fascinating character in Young Justice. So if they even get a fraction of what the character is like in that animated TV series, then he's going to be fascinating in Supergirl. Obviously, there's going to be certain changes considering he is also going to be his creator. But I'm fairly confident that he's going to be a well-received character, probably just as well-received as he was in Young Justice. So,
all right. So in more casting news, we have General Sam Lane has been cast. Yes, that is the father of Lois and Lucy Lane. So General Sam Lane will be played by Glenn Morshower, who has been in basically everything ever as a military character. So if you've ever watched anything, you've probably seen him. He's been in X-Men First Class, 24, Transformers Dark of the Moon, Friday Night Lights, and about 87 other things. So I'm sure you've seen him playing a military role somewhere. But the character is being described as a powerful military lifer and an overprotective father to both Lucy Lane and her sister Lois. His arrival in National City stirs up trouble for Supergirl when he enlists her in a dangerous government initiative. And we heard at the TCAs that Red Tornado would be introduced as having a connection to General Sam Lane, and seeing as Red Tornado was being built for the army, that makes sense since we've got the military figure. So it'll be interesting to see how all of that is tied up as well.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be really, really interesting to see the military aspect of this, because obviously in shows like The Flash and like Arrow, we don't necessarily see the military, but we do see the police force quite a lot. So it's going to be interesting to see how something on like the government level, I guess, like a lot higher up, is going to react to having, I guess, superheroes or powered people or metahumans or whatever they want to call them, kind of within their knowledge and how they react to that. And yeah, it's going to be really it's like a really fascinating aspect to take on because, you know, much like we're seeing with the threads with Civil War over in the Marvel side of things, you know, and the government wanting to have more accountability for the heroes and what they're doing and all of that.
Yeah, so exciting aspects ahead. And speaking of the Lanes, we also got our first look at Lucy, as she'll be in the show, played by Jenna Dewan Tatum. So the picture looks like it's in Catco, Cat Grant's company, and she's standing between a very shell-shocked looking James Olsen and Kara. So she's there, she's looking pretty, and we can be relieved to hear that, according to executive producer Ali Adler, that She's not going to be coming in just for a love triangle, they're saying. Adler says, we hope to explore the history that Lucy has with James Olsen, or as Lucy knows him, Jimmy Olsen. We also know they're going to bring in her father. And then she goes on to add, Lucy not only plays a romantic foil with whatever Kara and James are brewing, but people will also be surprised that she's really a woman's woman. She and Kara develop their own friendship, too. We're not just bringing her in to purposefully create tension. She serves a larger story drive. So that's definitely a positive, because we're going to be able to see, or we're not going to have a big triangle, which I know a lot of people, myself included, were concerned about when they first announced that she was coming in and was going to be an ex of James. And the last thing we really need is that love triangle going on and messing with the girl power message of the show. So it's good to see that she and Kara are going to have their own friendship and all that.
Yeah, I'm definitely into the idea that they're going to be friends. I mean, I'm very over and very tired of the whole pitting women against each other over a love interest thing that they have going on a lot of the time. So knowing that they're going to be friends, that's going to be really, really cool. And it could even feasibly be that they are like Lucy and Jimmy are definitely over each other and they're just good friends. And it could be that she'll offer advice and whatever about maybe Kara's feelings, or maybe even to Jimmy about his feelings and stuff like that. So it could even play off in a really interesting way, with her wanting the best for both of them rather than her wanting to sabotage or set herself up as like a love rival, because it's not something that you tend to see, like amicable splits with people remaining friends and then them befriending their potential new love interest. And yeah, it's definitely a different way of going about things that I'm quite interested to go and like to see when it comes on screen.
The more we hear, the more optimistic I get, because we're like, this needs to be the girl power series, and then you hear things that could potentially derail that, and then they're like, no, we're doing it this way. You're like, okay, good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, definitely. No, completely agree with that. Because I think the great thing about Supergirl, for me, is that they're basically, like, even on all of the casting calls and even through a lot of, like, the initial promo, it kind of set me on the back foot a little bit, because it was playing a lot into stereotypes. And it's really, really nice to see that now we're getting more information about the show as production continues, that, okay, that may have been their way of initially getting people in and getting people cast, but that's not how they're setting up the show. That's not what they want from it. They really do want to show a wide variety of women in a wide variety of roles with a wide variety of relationships between them. They may not all be friendly, but they're not playing into tired stereotypes, which is refreshing.
Yeah, I agree. You can see the setup of certain tropes, and then they completely undermine them when we get more details. So the more I hear, the more excited I get for Supergirl. All right, so moving on from Supergirl, we have a lot of Flash news. So let's get excited for season 2 of The Flash. First, we have a whole bunch of casting news. So we have Damore Barnes, who will play Henry Hewitt, a.k.a. Tokamak, who is actually a Firestorm villain. The CW is describing him as a charming but cocky scientist who was affected by the same particle accelerator explosion that created the Flash. When Caitlin Snow recruits him to join the team at Star Labs, Hewitt jumps at the opportunity to fulfill his destiny as a powerful metahuman. So you may recognize Damore Barnes from 12 Monkeys or Supernatural, which he played Raphael. He's got a great deep voice that I'm excited to hear some more. But yeah, so we've got a Firestorm villain coming in. So we're continuing the patterns of bringing in other characters' villains. And that also seems to indicate that Firestorm will likely be around as things are moving forward too, which I know was there's been some question about, considering that only half of Firestorm has been set up for Legends of Tomorrow. So there's confusion about what's going on with Firestorm.
Yeah, well, so it's good to have at least a little bit more clarification that we're not going to see Firestorm, like, disappear completely. So depending on what direction they take with it, though, entirely, we still don't know yet. But yeah, it's going to be nice to see that they're not just... They're going to be hanging around a little bit. So yeah, it's definitely interesting.
I don't know that there's a lot to say about that, just that it's happening.
Yeah.
And then, if season two is the Oprah of speedsters, you have a speedster and you get a speedster, we get another speedster, but this time it's a girl. Thank goodness. So Violet Bean, who's a newcomer, will play Jessie Quick in season two. So she will be a brilliant but quirky college student who gets caught up in the battle between the Flash and Zoom, and the role is expected to be recurring.
How do you like that name?
It's a little on the nose.
Isn't it? I love it. No, I really, really do love the name. I'm like, oh, it's so great. Like, she's a speedster and her surname is Quick. Ba-dum-bum. Love it. I'm really excited to see, like, a lady speedster, though, because I was starting to... Obviously, I love all of the characters that they're adding. They have such great mythology in the Flash universe, and Barry's relationship with all of them is, like, really, really great. It's all thoroughly enjoyable, you know, both with Jay Garrick as, like, his mentor, and then Wally West as the person who takes over from him, where he becomes the mentor and teaches him. So it's... But it's really, really nice to bring another dynamic to that and not to have it so male-heavy, because the thing with Arrow, both Arrow and the Flash, is that it is still, they're both quite male-dominated in terms of character balance. Not to say that the female characters we get aren't remarkable or aren't amazing, because I love each and every one of them in their own way, but it'd be nice to even that balance out a little bit more. So having a new character come in who is a metahuman, who has or is going to have fairly similar powers in regards to her being a speedster and her kind of getting caught up in Barry's drama, I guess, is going to be quite fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, always happy to have more ladies, and ladies with powers is always good. All right, and our final bit of casting news, this is super exciting. We know now that Tony Todd will be voicing Zoom in season two. He'll first debut in episode two, which will be titled Flash of Two Worlds. So Andrew Kreisberg was saying that last year with the Reverse Flash, we just modulated Tom Cavanaugh's voice, and this year we wanted to do something a little bit different. Part of the mystery of the season is who or what is underneath the Zoom outfit, and so we wanted to do something like James Earl Jones as Darth Vader, this iconic voice coming out of this mask. Last year we thought of the Reverse Flash as a speed warrior. This year Zoom is like a speed demon, and no one does demon voice better than Tony Todd. So we're hearing more and more about Zoom, who's going to be the big bad of season two, and now we know he's getting an awesome voice.
Yeah, truer words never spoken, by the way. Like, Tony Todd is a phenomenal voice actor. Like, he was in Young Justice, I'm pretty sure. He was in one of the animated series, I'm pretty sure, because I remember him being in... Yeah, he was in Young Justice. So he was Augustus Freeman, who's also a character called Icon in Young Justice. And he is so good. Like, his voice is just... Oh, it's just... Go and check out some Young Justice clips on YouTube if you haven't heard his voice. Or I don't know if Young Justice is still on Netflix. It was a very short while ago. Which I started rewatching Young Justice on Netflix a couple of months ago, and just man, you know when you get those iconic voices that you just you listen to and they like send shivers up your spine because they're just that good. Like, Tony Todd is one of those. So that they've got him coming into the flesh, even though it's like just his voice, like that is, that's so good for me. I'm like, yes, cool. I am okay with this. This is great. Because if we want to be terrified, he's going to terrify us. And he's going to be like almost, even from just his voice, he's going to be this oppressive presence that is going to be quite terrifying. And I think they cast that voice very, very well.
Yeah, and it sounds like we should be having him voice Zoom for a while because they're comparing it to last season when we found out that Harrison Wells was the Reverse Flash, sort of. But that was in the mid-season finale that we got that reveal, which was way sooner than anyone was expecting. Whereas this year they're saying that's going to be a mystery that unfolds for most of the season. So sounds like it'll just be the voice for a good chunk of the season until we find out what they're doing. And they're saying that they have a new spin on who Zoom is in The Flash. And hopefully comic book fans will be happy because we've come up with a clever way to spin the tale, but that also makes it exciting for the people who aren't as familiar with the comics and are just enjoying the show on its own terms. So they're saying that Zoom's goal is simple and easy to understand and very primal. And just as with Wells last year, Zoom doesn't care who gets hurt or what gets destroyed in the service of him getting his goal. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I mean, also, I'm completely okay with not knowing who the villain is for a while. I mean, the thing with me and the thing that I get with, like, thrillers and horror stories is that I tend to be slightly more terrified by things unseen than I am, or like things that you, like, they're there as a presence and they're terrifying and imposing, but you don't truly know who that person is or who that presence is. Like, that for me holds like a little bit more emotional weight and is also a little bit scarier for me, is just the not knowing. So I'm kind of okay with us not having his identity straight up. I'm very okay with the fact that they've changed it up a little bit from the comics so that for me as a comic book reader, I'm going to be kept on my toes about his identity as well. But I'm excited to see it play out. I really, really am, because I know the voice is going to be terrifying. I know I'm going to be terrified by this character, and I'm not going to know who it is. So it's going to be a huge mystery for me, and I'm really, really excited to try and figure it out.
Can it be October yet? I'm so ready for The Flash to come back.
I know. I am as well. I'm so, so, so ready. It's going to be crazy. We're going to have everything back, like, all at the same time, pretty much. And it's going to be, like, an overwhelming, it's going to be like a steamroller of emotion.
There's the episode title. Okay, so more Flash, because there's so much Flash. We got our first look at Teddy Sears as Jay Garrick. The CW did this really awesome promo image where they recreated a classic comic book cover that had both Barry Allen and Jay Garrick on it coming to rescue someone calling for help from the Flash, and they recreated it with the live action characters. So it looks super cool. You've got Teddy Sears wearing the Jay Garrick helmet and everything. So looks really cool. And they put it side by side with the original cover so you could see the comparison. And it was a really cool promotional tool. Did you see that?
I did see it. I thought it was incredibly clever. Like, the thing with the DC TV series is that their marketing, like, everything they do in order to, like, drum up anticipation for the new series is so on point. And I'm always incredibly impressed by everything that they do, like, leading up to when the series, like, either initially airs or when it comes back after, like, after the season's been off for a while. And they're just, they pay such wonderful tributes back to it, to their source material, and just it's just so delicately done. It's not forced. It's not kind of, it's not weird. It's just, it's really touching sometimes, like the stuff that they do with their marketing, just to kind of be like, we know where this has come from and we know sometimes where it's going. And even though we're doing something slightly different, we really do appreciate and respect the source material. And that, for me, as a comic book fan, is so heartening because it just shows how much like they care for these characters and what they're doing with them and stuff. And it's like these things, it's like some people will say, well, it's just a poster, and it's like, well, you know, it's more than that. It really, really is. For me, it just shows a great respect.
Yeah, the poster kind of promotional materials are for the bigger fans, and less, it's kind of, we respect it, and everyone else can kind of be like, oh, that's cool, whatever. But the bigger comic book nerds can be like, that's so cool. And it is pretty cool.
It's almost like an Easter egg for us in certain respects. So, yeah, it's great. I really love it. I really, really do. I hope they keep on with this kind of trend because I just get excited every time they release either like a little poster or a little clip, or even like sometimes when they just give like little flashes of like new suits or new costumes, and just, yeah, it's really exciting.
Oh, just over a month to go. Oh. So, also in news for those of you who may be concerned about season two being way too speedster heavy, executive producer Gabrielle Stanton assures you that The Flash, the show, is always Barry's journey. It's always about Barry, but these people who come in will show us different ways that the Flash can be. So she says that Jay Garrick is going to be Barry's mentor a little bit and help him really reach his potential as the Flash, while Wally West is going to have a very interesting and close relationship with him, Barry, and the rest of the Star Labs team. So it's still all about Barry, so don't worry about oversaturation. They promise it's all about Barry.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with it is that there's got to be repercussions to what happened at the end of season one. Like, that wormhole opening is going to have a larger effect on the universe as a whole, and, you know, other versions of other people throughout space and time may have fallen through into Barry's world, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to take that story away from him. It's just, I guess, supporting characters in order to help further Barry's story and help him reach his potential, which, you know, the thing is that I was never really too worried about that, because all of the people that they've been introducing in regard to the Flash have been people who are so intrinsically linked with Barry's development from like the comic books. It just made a little bit of sense. You know, Jay Garrick has always been that, I guess, not necessarily a father figure, but he's definitely guided Barry, especially with his powers, and so it's really, really nice to know that that is definitely the direction that they're going in. But then obviously Barry to Wally, it's going to be interesting to see that kind of move down from Garrick to Barry, and then Barry to Wally West. Like, that's going to be a really interesting parallel to see play out through this season, how Garrick acts as a mentor to Barry, and potentially how Barry acts as a mentor to Wally. So, yeah, I think it'll be quite fun.
Yes, so I think it's just reassuring because I've seen comments in plenty of articles about being like, too many speedsters, stop with the speedsters all in one season. That they're aware that that's a concern, but they're not, it's not going to be a problem because if they're aware of it, they can make sure to avoid it. So that's good that they acknowledge the concern at least.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the same concern that people have had with Civil War. But I think the difference here is that the basically everyone that they're adding to the Flash are people who have always been very central to Barry's story anyway. Like, they are people who, when you talk about Barry Allen, they are names that follow very closely on his heels. She like my
because
they're all so fast. Boom. Boom. Yeah. Oh God. yeah, but you know, they're very, very, very intrinsically linked to Barry's story anyway. So it's not a complete surprise that they're adding them, honestly. And I wasn't concerned for the Flash the way that I was when they started adding so many characters to Civil War, because as well, it's a whole season. They've got so many episodes. They're probably not going to be in every single one. They are probably going to drop in and out. They are not going to be a main focus for the entire series. You know, the thing that's always going to be central to that is Barry. You know, these characters are there to support him and flesh out his story. So while we may love them and may get like a lot of enjoyment out of all of these little side stories, there are ways in a TV series that they can kind of dedicate a little time to them and flesh them out, but not take away from Barry as the central character too much. So it's a lot easier with TV shows to add slightly more characters and still keep it fairly, you know, streamlined in regards to the central story.
Agreed. So optimism reigns when it comes to the Flash, which is so different from how we normally are with a lot of shows and films that are like, I'm not sure. And then it's the Flash, and we're like, everything is sunshine and roses because it's the Flash.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be real. The Flash is a lot of fun anyway. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It does have a lot of fun with its storylines and its characters. And you know, season one was so strong in terms of its story and introducing all of these characters. And you know, if you think back on it, there were a lot of characters introduced. A lot. Like, there were a lot of new villains, a lot of new metahumans, and it didn't take away from Barry's story and learning about him and learning about his motivations and his family and his relationships with his like friends and almost like his surrogate father. And you know, I have faith that the way that they executed season one was done in such a really, really, really well way that they're gonna do the same for season two. So I'm not, it's like, it's really weird. It's the one show that I'm not worried about. It's, yeah, like you said, The Flash is sunshine and rainbows, so I'm sunshine and rainbows.
And speaking of sunshine and rainbows and promotional materials that make Danya happy, The Flash released a couple of posters for season two. We've got one with Barry in his updated suit with the white emblem on the chest and lightning, and it says it's go time, and it looks really great. And there's another one that features Jay Garrick's helmet and has lightning crackling and says, get up to speed. So a couple of very cool looking promotional posters for season two.
And puns,
Love
like thank you,
puns.
marketing gods, for these glorious puns. Like, they are punderful. I love them.
So yeah, there's not a lot to say about them. They look really cool. Check them out on
They
Hypebubble
do.
if you haven't seen them. They're great.
Yeah, they really, really are. They're, like I said, their posters are just really on point. They're like, some of them are really, really subtle. And they're just, it's just the right amount of nodding back to the comic books and its origins. So yeah, I'm really liking them and liking the puns. Keep them coming.
So, speaking of photos, we got a couple first look photos at both The Flash and Arrow. So, the first look photo from The Flash features most of the team in Star Labs, and they're all looking really shocked at something that's off camera. We don't know what it is, but Joe has his gun drawn, and you've got Joe and Barry and Iris and Cisco and Caitlin and Dr. Stein all present. So it wouldn't surprise me if they were looking at Harrison Wells, since we know that Tom Cavanaugh will still be a series regular this season, but he won't be Eobard Thawne. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're looking at him and are like, WTF, but that's just a theory.
Maybe someone is flashing them. Oh, I should be banned. I should not be allowed to speak anymore.
That was pretty bad.
It was really bad. You know, that's probably why Joe's got his gun drawn, not in front of my daughter. Put it away.
That sounds away.
I know.
Yeah. And then our first look at Arrow, season 4, is of Felicity and Oliver. We know that they are going to be a couple in season 4 after they drove off into the sunset at the end of season 3. So the first look is of Felicity and standing over Oliver, and they have kind of soft expressions on their faces because they're ooey gooey in love and all that good stuff. So.
And no explosions.
And no explosions.
There's no explosions. No one has blown up. So that's a better start than they've had before. So, yeah. We'll take that. We'll take some smiles and gentleness. And less fire.
Exactly. Exactly. That'll come in the trailer, which we should take a moment to note will come out after we have finished recording. That's why we're not talking about it. We'll talk about it next time.
Yeah, because unfortunately, certain hosts need something known as sleep. It's very inconvenient, and I'm kind of frowny-facing at Stephen Amell to be like, why are you releasing trailers so late for the UK? What's up with that?
How dare you not take time zones into account?
Rude. Yeah, yeah, please release these earlier so it's more convenient for us to record our podcast.
So we're not ignoring it. It just hasn't come out yet. So
yeah. Next episode, we will definitely cover everything in excruciating detail because we will probably be overly excited about everything.
Exactly. And you can check out Twitter for our immediate responses.
Oh yeah, definitely. Except mine will probably be the day after. It'll be a delayed reaction because, you know, again, sleep.
With the all caps one with numbers and incomprehensible things. Those will be our responses to the Arrow trailer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I can guarantee that now.
Okay. So speaking of Arrow and speaking of posters, we got an Arrow season 4 poster. Also punning. They say, aim higher. And it's got a shot of Oliver in his new Green Arrow costume because he's going to be Green Arrow this season. So he's looking all stoic hero. And we got our tagline and all that good stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, again, marketing. Keep coming out with these puns. I'm enjoying them. But I'm also enjoying this more detailed look at the suit because... yeah, it's really cool. Like, now that it's, like, slightly higher resolution, you can go in and you can see the subtleties in the green and stuff, and it's so cool. Like, it's so nice. I can't wait to see what it comes out like on film and after they've put post in and changed the lighting up a little bit. Like, I think it's gonna look really cool. Really, really cool on film. So, yeah.
Agreed.
Why is it not out yet? I know.
And speaking of costumes,
oh god,
this one will perhaps be less positively received. Diggle is suiting up for season 4. We heard at Comic-Con that he would be getting a helmet, and there's some promo art that is circling that shows him with the helmet with a visor, but the CW released a photo that doesn't quite look like that. It looks more like he's Magneto. So Diggle's got a helmet that does nothing to disguise his identity. And yeah, so Diggle's suiting up.
Diggle is suiting up. Diggle is suiting up. Oh man. Now, see, everyone has been saying Magneto, and I see it. I do see it in, like, the little pointy bit and the bit coming round. But the whole getup all together gave me more of, like, a Judge Dredd kind of feel, which, you know, just this whole, like, arms crossed looking really stern at the kind of, like, just looking into the middle distance, like, looking really, really serious and kind of thing. And all I've got in the back of my mind is that really terrible, like monologue speech from Dredd in the 2012 film. I mean, it as in dreadfully, awfully brilliant, because I love that movie beyond words. Like, it's dreadful. So good. Yeah. Dreadful. I know. I'm great. I'm on form with my puns tonight. It's brilliant. But I'm just thinking of him going, I am the law. All, oh, no. No, 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 no. It just, it's, the costumes have all been so good on Arrow and Flesh, and this one just looks, it's a little ridiculous, I have to admit.
With the others.
It doesn't, but also, it's not hiding his identity at all. I don't know what they're thinking. Unless that the bit across his eyes comes across like a visor and then hides like most more of his face. You know, I just don't get it.
Yeah, because it's definitely different than the promo art that's floating around that actually does disguise his face with the visor. So I'm not sure why that's not the case, or maybe it will be and they just want you to be able to see that it's Diggle in the picture, but
yeah,
I don't
maybe
know.
If it does come down over his eyes a little bit more, then I'm definitely gonna be, it's Judge Dredd. Yeah. It's Judge Dredd. But it's kind of like I was saying to Caitlin a little bit earlier today, it's almost like they expect everyone in the Arrow universe to have what I like to call Sailor Moon syndrome, where everyone has face blindness and voice blindness. I don't know, like they can't tell who's speaking and they can't tell who they're talking to from, because let's face it, in Sailor Moon, the characters look identical from their civilian looks to, like, their superhero. I know. It's just, it's completely crazy. Like, they look, for the most part, every single one of them looks identical. So, it's kind of like Arrow goes off that same logic where I've put a mask on, now you can't recognize me.
His just seems, like, even less so than some of the other ones. Because, like, with the hood that Oliver wears, at least he can, like, back into shadow in a way with it. Whereas this is, like, Diggle's face is still, like, front and center. Like, look at my face!
See, now all I'm thinking of is Oliver, like, backing into the shadows and being like, I am the knight! I'm just thinking of that little Batman thing with this, like, it's an actual bat and is, like, flapping its wings a bit and just going, I am the knight, unhand me! It's like, that's all I'm thinking of. Just imagine Oliver doing that now, guys. Just imagine it for 1 second. You're welcome.
Yeah. So, if you haven't seen Diggle's new look, check it out. We've posted it to Hypeable, and you can sound off about how he looks like Magneto or Judge Dredd in the comics. We will completely agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There'll be a lot of agreeing on this one.
All right. So moving on from Arrow to Legends of Tomorrow, which is, by the way, doing its first table read today. So exciting. We had an interview from executive producer and showrunner Phil Klemmer. He said that every episode of Legends of Tomorrow will have every main character in it, which is pretty impressive considering that there are a lot of main characters. And he also confirmed that Hawkman will be a series regular, which we had not heard before. We knew that he had been cast and would first show up in the Arrow Flash crossover, but now we know he will also be a series regular alongside Hawk Girl. So he kind of goes on to talk about the relationship between Hawk Girl and Hawkman, saying the way we've imagined them is that they've obviously been reincarnated through the ages together, but the fact that he remembers their previous lives and she doesn't, it gives them very much a Bogey and Bacall sort of relationship. So adding they're constantly fighting, and the fact that they're destined to be in love is something that seems impossible to her. That's the kind of sentimentality that we really strive to avoid on this show. The fact that they're going to be together someday, we try desperately at every moment to disprove that. This is going to be the one time that they decide to, like, shoot each other in the face. So they don't want sentimentality on the show.
It's kind of making me think a little bit of, and this is because I've been rewatching a lot of Pride and Prejudice, but it's just making me think a little bit of Darcy and Elizabeth, just stubbornness and pride and stuff all around. It's definitely my Pride and Prejudice bias coming out there, because I've probably rewatched so many. Yeah, every single version of Pride and Prejudice I've watched in the last week. I don't know why. I really, really don't. Like, I've just watched everything, and I'm like, I've got to the end of the week, and I've just been like, but why? Why did I feel the need to do that? I mean, with the BBC series, fair enough. I rewatch that, like, all the time, because Colin Firth, let's be real. But yeah, it's just giving me very Elizabeth and Darcy vibes from that. So, and considering I very much love Pride and Prejudice, as you guys all know, and may also know from my Instagram if you follow that, because I've been playing the Marrying Mr. Darcy card game a lot with some friends, and I keep winning at it, which is awesome. But yeah, I really, really, really love Pride and Prejudice, so I'm totally okay with digging those vibes.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that they're kind of trying to undercut any sense of sentimentality in the show. So he also said that when asked about romance, because obviously the hot girl, hawk man thing is playing in, but for the other characters, Clemmer said, I mean, there'll be more sex than romance, but eventually there's the possibility of romance. It's not a sentimental show. I mean, the fact that we're traveling through time and people are doing something as emotionally fraught as getting to examine their own past, the way you leaven that is with humor and irony and irreverence. So it definitely isn't a romantic show, which isn't to say that it can't be earnest at moments, but I think it's going to be a good bit funnier and filled with irreverence. It's wry and it's adult. That's how you leaven something like time travel. So it sounds like they're trying for a completely different feel than Flash and Arrow, which it really needs to stand on its own. And I like it.
Yeah, me too. And I guess it's a really interesting way of them approaching that, because obviously their one really big comparison is probably going to be Doctor Who, especially with Arthur Darvill coming across onto the show. Like, it's going to be a very, very clear comparison between the two. And the thing with Doctor Who is, while it does have its fairly deeply emotional and serious moments, it is, for all intents and purposes, a family show. It always has been since it was originally introduced many, 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 many years before this reboot happened. And it does get very light and airy and often a little bit silly at times, and there's nothing wrong with that. I like the ridiculousness of Doctor Who. It's going to be interesting to see how, like, kind of, I guess, almost dark and serious Legends of Tomorrow will get, especially if it's going to be less romance, more sex. Was that what they said? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. I'm really interested to see what kind of humor, because I'm one of those people that I like my humor a little dark. I don't know what it is. I'm a very nice person. Like, if you meet me in person, I'm very, very nice, and I can be quite sweet. But my humor, on the other hand, is very, very dark. I enjoy dark humor quite a lot. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they strike that balance.
I'm really interested to see how this goes, and it makes sense that they're kind of going for this wry adult feel because of just the cast of characters. You've got a couple of straight up villains, and you've got Sarah coming back, and she's clearly not going to be all there for a lot of it. And so you're going to have them playing off each other, and then playing off someone who's like as chipper as Ray. So it's going to be really interesting to see, but it makes sense with, like, having people like Captain Cold and Heatwave on the show that they would go a slightly different angle with their humor and approach.
Yeah, and I like that. I like that in this universe where you've got Arrow, The Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow, they're all going to have a distinct and different feel to them. Like, they're going to have, obviously, certain similarities that are going to thread through all three of them, but they're going to be able to stand alone as having their own theme and their own kind of feel. And I really, really like that, because while you can draw comparisons between the three of them, they're going to be different enough that they can stand on their own as well, which I like.
Agreed. And speaking of shows that are in the Arrowverse, the last thing we want to touch on DC television news-wise is that Vixen has premiered on CW Seed. It's the 6-episode animated series that follows Mari McCabe, who has this mystical totem necklace that gives her the abilities of animals. So you've got characters from Arrow and The Flash coming to see her in Detroit and figure out how she got her powers. So when the show first premiered, the lead voice actress playing Mari, Megalyn Echikunwoke, did an interview, and she had some really great things to talk about in terms of representation and the importance of having a heroine of color, saying that Vixen is a superhero that I've always wanted to exist, but that I didn't know she actually existed, and that she kind of describes Mari as a self-made superhero. Her backstory is she was orphaned and born in Africa, then gets to the United States. So she's really trying to find her identity as a young woman, which kind of makes her very universal in terms of character. So, and she's kind of implied that the chance of Vixen transitioning into live action has to do with how well the animated series does on CW Seed. But she's kind of under the assumption that most people are that she would obviously be playing Mari should she go to live action, and she is totally game for it. So I would love to see that. Have you watched the first 2 episodes, Danya?
I'm actually incredibly devastated that I have not yet found a way to be able to watch the episodes. It's I haven't been able to get to them. I use an IP blocker, because obviously I'm in the UK, and unfortunately for me, that means you guys block a lot of your content because of licensing laws, blah, 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 blah. Completely uninterested. I just want to watch my shows, guys. I don't care about these laws and these rules. God. No, for some reason, my IP switch to make it seem like I'm in the US wouldn't work with the CW Seed for some reason. I don't know why, so I am going to have to find an alternative means to watch Vixen. I will get there eventually, because I think this show is incredibly, incredibly important, and I'm so excited for it. I was excited for it before Comic-Con and everything as well, and I was seeing people carrying around the Vixen bags, and I got really excited about it, because even that comment about Megalyn wanting this character and not knowing she existed. This is why we need these characters. That's why they're so sorely needed, is that people don't even know that they're out there, because they're so few and far between, and they're not even kind of hyped up and in the public eye as much as some of the other ones that we're aware of. So it's so important that we get to see these characters play out in their own storylines, and we have people who are so incredibly vocal about how important these characters are, letting more people know about them. So I want to watch it, and I want to watch it in a way that they'll be able to track that I'm watching it, so that they know that this is something I'm watching and want to see more of. But I've heard really good things about it. Really good things. So obviously you've watched it, right, Caitlin?
I have, yes.
What did you think?
I've really enjoyed it. The main issue that I have is before it premiered, Mark Guggenheim told somebody that it was going to be 6 30-minute episodes, and then you get to it and they're about 5 to 6 minutes long. So we're getting about 30 minutes total of content, which is super disappointing, because the content that we have is really great. So as the episodes stop, you're just like, I want more. That's my main complaint, is that I want more of it. It's really great. It's really fun, and it's cool that they're just setting it in the Arrowverse, so it is canon in Arrow. And Stephen Amell and Grant Gustin are voicing their characters. We're going to see Cisco and Felicity, and Carlos Valdez and Emily Bette Ricard are also going to be voicing their characters. So it's so cool. And the content so far has been really great, just really short. So hopefully lots of people will watch and we can get more or see her in live action or both.
Yeah, hopefully, because I'd really like to see this character cross over into the live action show. And like I said, there are not enough superheroes who are also people of color. Like, there aren't. It's that simple. And to have more of them is only ever going to be a good thing. You know, we have all of these wonderfully strong women in all of these shows, and we can say that's amazing. You know, it's great that we're seeing all of these women. It's great. But the sad and terrible truth of it is that the majority of them are still white, you know. So it's really, really, it's so important that we start to see more people of color coming into these shows. And I think it is starting to happen. And that's great. I just want to, like, see it keep ramping up. Because I mean, as a white woman, I have a lot of characters that I can get inspiration from. I have a lot of characters that I can connect to. But there are so many people who don't have enough to choose from. And I think that is, it's so upsetting. It's such a shame. So to have them become more prominent and more prevalent across all of these series is something that I want more of. And yeah, I'm just really, really hoping that people keep watching Vixen, no matter how short these episodes are, just so that they know that this is something that people want and something that people are clamoring for, and so we see more of this character, because I'm so excited to just see it. I'm a little disappointed that the episodes are like 5 or 6 minutes long, but I still really, really want to see them. Right, I guess we'll jump over to Marvel TV. There's not as much as DC, so this is going to be very, very brief. So, a couple of months ago, we found out that there was going to be a Mockingbird TV series on the table and coming out and moving forward. And then they went, oh wait, no, that's not happening. Well, it's back on the table again, guys. They've actually ordered a pilot for it. So we are going to be getting a pilot, at least, for a series called Marvel's Most Wanted, which is going to be about Mockingbird and Lance Hunter. So it looks as though it could have been completely, completely rethought. So whatever was on the table before as a story, it looks like they've potentially scrapped that and they're kind of going with a different story, maybe. But yeah, there's not really a lot of information other than we're getting a pilot. So yeah, it's kind of being described as like not a spin-off, but a new take focusing on the same duo and their continuing adventures.
So how is that not a spin-off?
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. It is exactly the definition of a spin-off. But regardless, like, I'm always excited to see more Mockingbird. The thing for me that's always continuously the sticking point is that Lance Hunter is not Hawkeye. It's going to continue to be the sticking point for me because I absolutely love the Mockingbird and Hawkeye relationship and story. And it's kind of like getting Lance is kind of like getting Hawkeye in the TV series without actually getting Hawkeye in the TV series. So I'm always going to be slightly bitter about it because I have such a bias, such a Hawkeye bias. But, you know,
you... What?
Yeah, I know, right? I know. No, it's going to be good, though. I mean, I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know what's going to happen with it. We clearly do not have enough information to base a judgment on just yet. It is most definitely a spin-off, no matter what they're saying. It is a spin-off. And we're at least going to get a pilot to see how it does, which will, in the current theme of things, probably be leaked early, so
quote-unquote leaked.
Yeah, Exactly. You know, I'm not ever going to be disappointed about getting more of Mockingbird. So, yeah, there's not really much more to say about it because there's not really a lot of information other than, hey, we've ordered a pilot and it's called Marvel's Most Wanted. So,
And it needs Mac in it because Bobby and Mac have the best friendship ever.
I really do like Mac a lot. A lot. So, hopefully we'll see some of the characters crossing over. I mean, I guess, yeah, Marvel TV is so intrinsically linked the way that the whole cinematic universe is, so it would be strange not to see more characters cross over into it. So, but I guess we'll see. We'll probably start getting more information as they start, you know, ramping up production on that pilot. But for now, it's happening again. Don't know for how long, but it's happening.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and very, very briefly, Dub Smash War is back. It's basically going to be done in light of charity this time around. So essentially how it's working is they've set up on CrowdRise. They've got two teams, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. Basically, the people who win will be the people that you vote for. How do you vote for them? By donating money. So it's essentially every dollar donated counts as a vote. So basically, the person with the most dollars for their charity wins. And again, all the money's going to charity, which it's really, really cool that something that turned out to be a little silly thing for them to pass the time and have fun with in Comic-Con has now turned into something that they're doing for the good of other people. Like, this is the one thing that I really, really love about how the Marvel cast used their position in order to better lives for other people. Like, they're kind of like, oh, people really responded to this. Well, how can we do this and basically do something good with that time and with what we're doing? So, yes, the first Dub Smash is out. It is the Agent Carter Dub Smash, and we see Hayley Atwell and James Darcy joined by Miss Piggy for some nice little cross promotion there on the network. Very, very cool. And they're all dressed up in Peggy's classic blue suit with the red hat. Yes, James Darcy as well, looking very fetching and dancing to Single Ladies. So it's, yeah. It's very, very good. So if you're interested in it, check it out. It was, you know, the original Dub Smash War I really, really loved. But this time round, it's for charity. So it's going to be cool to see how they keep trying to one up each other. So, did you see it?
I did, and it was hilarious, and I am excited to see what the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. team will do in response.
I
Because how do you
know.
top Miss Piggy?
I know, right? It's so great. But yes, keep an eye out on Dub Smash, guys. And don't forget to go and I guess vote and donate for your favorite team or donate to both. That's what I did because I felt really bad. I was like, oh, I don't want to just give to one, I'll give to both because I'm terrible. Split
Did you
allegiances.
donate the same amount to both sides?
Yeah,
So your
I
votes
did.
cancel each other out.
Basically, but hey, the charity gets the money, so
So
I'm
the
okay with
charity
that.
wins in the end.
The charity is what wins, and that's the important part for me. So, right, let's move on to movies because we have a lot more Marvel movie news. So we'll start off with what is arguably the biggest piece of news in the Marvel universe. So there has been a shuffle. There has been a massive power shuffle in the Marvel studio. Like, it's really crazy. So Kevin Feige is leveling up, essentially. He is now reporting directly to Disney chairman Alan Horn instead of the CEO of Marvel Entertainment. So what this means essentially for us as fans is that Kevin Feige is essentially, he has complete control over the MCU now. So previously, they would still have to go through Ike Perlmutter, who was reports about Ike Perlmutter has been that he's very, very difficult to work with. There are rumors that are kind of, they're not substantiated rumors. There's no concrete evidence or proof that a lot of the secrecy issues and a lot of the roadblocks that they came up against were essentially down to him. A couple of the leaked emails from Sony would potentially prove that his comments about female superhero movies in particular didn't necessarily cast him in a good light. So yeah, with Feige now reporting directly to Alan Horn instead means that they're breaking off from the direct control of Marvel Entertainment. What could this mean? Current rumors are that we may see a shift in merchandising. We may be seeing a shift in characters that'll come across. We may even see a shift in where the budget is used. So yeah, there was a quote, Devin, I don't know if it's Farachi or Farasi, but he's over on Birth Movies Death, and he has a contact within Marvel, or a reported contact within Marvel. He tends to be fairly accurate most of the time, so that's why, you know, I'd believe it. But also, there was a creative committee that worked along with Perlmutter and some of the others. So, like Alan Fine, there was a publisher called Dan Buckley, and Joe Quesada were all on this creative committee that basically have like that had like a huge amount of power and influence over what happened within the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But that's, you know, done. That's over. So they no longer have an influence over the movies. Interestingly, they will still have influence over the TV shows. So Jeff Loeb still has to report to Perlmutter for the TV shows, which is interesting. I'm worrying that we may see a divide between the two. But Devin basically said, any drag or difficulty caused by the creative committee is over, and any skinflint choices and bizarre decisions made by Ike are out of the way. Trivia, I understand the reason there are no Black Widow toys is specifically because Ike, with a background in toys, believes girl toys do not sell and thus vetoed them again and again. One guy was the roadblock. And now we're going to see Marvel Studios operating at full power as it goes into Phase 3. So there's a lot of speculation and rumor and kind of finger pointing at where the blame lies with a lot of stuff. So, you know, it all sounds promising, and I guess only time will tell. What did you think of this news when it broke, Caitlin?
I mean, if it gets us Black Widow merchandise, I am all in favor of it. The way it's being framed seems to be all positive for fans, but decisions like that are rarely so one-sided, so I'll just be interested to see how things play out moving forward.
Yeah, it is going to be really, really interesting because it's such a huge shakeup. Like, this is, in terms of like the power balance between the MCU and everything, it's just, it's crazy that it's happened, even, because it now makes like the Marvel Studios, so on the movie side, more like Lucasfilm and stuff like that, and the Jim Henson Company. You know, they're still gonna operate under Disney, but now they're gonna have slightly more sway over what happens. And yeah, I don't know. Like I said, time is going to tell with this one. I want to hope that this will mean some really great changes, but there's no way to know. Kevin Feige sometimes can make some very interesting comments. He doesn't always make choices that I agree with, but then you have to wonder how many of those things were his choices and how many were Perlmutter's. Like, he's the face still of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and what happens in it. And I guess how many of the decisions were Perlmutter's that he's taken the fall for? I guess, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
And it doesn't sound like it'll really affect Civil War, so we're going to have to wait a little while to see any ramifications on anything that hits the screen.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, maybe we'll see. I guess our first test of it is going to be merchandising for Civil War. I guess that'll be the first look in that we get. It's not going to have any impact on the movie itself, but it's happened early enough that potentially it'll have an impact on the actual merchandising. We're still out far enough out that more things can be put into production and changed and put forward. So, yeah, I guess as Civil War comes up and comes out, we will maybe start to see some changes. Or we might see no changes.
Time will tell.
Yeah, time will definitely tell. But speaking of Civil War, we got some promo art that kind of shows which side all of the Avengers are on.
Hashtag
you're Bucky. So we've got, their little concept art kind of postery things that show the lineup. And very interestingly, Scarlet Witch is missing. She's not in these images at all, and I wasn't expecting it, because obviously she's part of this new Avengers team that was set up at the end of Age of Ultron. I would have expected her to have been in, I guess, on one of the sides, maybe, but it could even be that she's operating in her own interests, rather than wanting to take sides, you know. But that, I guess, wouldn't necessarily fit into her character development at the end of Age of Ultron, with Hawkeye being like, you step out that door, you're an Avenger. So as previously reported on Iron Man's side, so Team Tony is Black Widow, War Machine, Vision, and Black Panther. No Spider-Man. But it is suggested that Spider-Man is going to be on Tony's side, though he doesn't feature in the images at all. On Team Cap, we have Hawkeye, Ant-Man, Sharon Carter, Falcon, and Bucky. So the battle lines have been drawn, and it basically just confirms the rumors that have been going around about the lineup. So that's now solidified. So we know what side each Avenger is on. Were you shocked, really, at the lineup at all?
I think I was most surprised just to see Sharon Carter included, because I'd seen a lot of stuff that was focusing on Scarlet Witch and her place, and then Scarlet Witch is nowhere to be seen, and you have Sharon Carter, who I hadn't really seen in any discussions leading up to this art being released. So that was interesting. And also Falcon has a mechanical Falcon.
Yes. Yeah. Red Wing. So in the actual comics, Red Wing is an actual bird, is an actual Falcon. So it's kind of really cool, like the way that they're taking that on and kind of developing that to fit into the movies a little bit better, and I guess to be slightly more cinematic, because it makes slightly more sense with the technological side and the technological themes that they've got going through there, and Falcon being like a military man and a pilot and that sort of thing. So it's very, very interesting. So I like that little switch up. I'm excited to see Sharon in the promotional material, because it really solidifies for me again that this is a Captain America story. So it really brings it down to characters who've been involved in his storyline quite closely. And her being in Winter Soldier and then coming across into Civil War and being on his side. Like, I really like that. I like that they're carrying that thread across. So, yeah, I guess we'll see where everyone else falls in terms of their sides, other than these guys who are quite clearly going to be the main characters and the main players. I guess we'll find out later on about Spider-Man and Scarlet Witch.
Now we just need a trailer.
Yeah. I would very much like a trailer. Please, thank. yeah, on to other Marvel kind of movies. We have got another Doctor Strange casting rumor. So anyone who is a fan of Hannibal, Mads Mikkelsen is being eyed to play a villain in Doctor Strange. So apparently the rumor goes that there's no offer officially given to him yet, much like with Benedict Cumberbatch, his name was bandied around for ages with no offer being given, but it's expected that the offer will be given soon. So yeah, I think this may be the only casting announcement that I've been excited about for Doctor Strange. I think Mads Mikkelsen is a phenomenal actor, and I think he will make an interesting villain and an interesting foil to Doctor Strange. So I just really like him a lot. I'm excited about it. I really, really am. What about you? Do you watch Hannibal?
I don't, so I haven't seen Mads Mikkelsen in anything. So it does nothing for me.
I tried watching Hannibal, couldn't get through it because I don't know, there's something about it that's a little bit triggery for me. I don't know what it is. But I've seen him in some other stuff. He's been in a couple of like period pieces, which, as you guys know, I like my Pride and Prejudice, so it means that I've watched a lot of period stuff as well. Yeah, I don't know, I quite like him. Yeah, I just wanna find out a little bit more about like the actual story and what's going on, and I maybe want to see a little bit more of the look and the concept art, because at the moment all we have is the casting and I'm still a little bit on the fence with most of it. But hey ho. Right, more Marvel stuff. Got some stuff about Spider-Man, because of course we did. Spider-Man seems to be the hot topic still at the moment. So there was a little interview with Andrew Garfield recently that basically, you know, how far development of the third Amazing Spider-Man film had gone, and Andrew Garfield had said that he'd started workshopping ideas with Alex Kurtzman, who was going to be writing it, and they were thinking about starting from the base level, like the foundational level, where they'd left Peter off, and what they where they wanted to see him go, and what was logical, and yeah, basically they were talking about, like, how they built upon that deep, desperate moment with Gwen. So they got to some really heavy places, and you know, it was really interesting to hear that Andrew Garfield was getting very, very involved in the initial scripting. But he was then asked whether he was ever involved in the early stages of the deal with Marvel, but he went, "No, to be honest. All the ins and outs of what happened is a more tender conversation that maybe I don't want to talk about in public in a press situation, but all I can say is that I'm stoked to go and watch a Marvel film of Spider-Man." It seems like maybe he knows a little bit more than he's letting on about what was going on behind the scenes, but yeah, I still think it's a shame that we're not seeing him more. I really did enjoy him as Peter. I think even as Civil War's coming around, I would have preferred to have seen a slightly older Spider-Man getting involved in that story. But, you know, we have what we have now. So it's just interesting to hear that Andrew Garfield was getting really involved in the next Amazing Spider-Man movie. And it's a shame that he's not going to see that come to fruition, because some of it sounded really interesting, that we were going to get some really deep character-driven stuff. I guess it's just a bit of a shame that we're never going to see him pull that off. Single tear of sadness rolling down my cheek.
Alas.
I know. Alas, alack. We also got some casting news for Gambit, because yay! It's still going on, and it's still going on with Channing Tatum. So French actress Léa Seydoux is going to be playing Belladonna Bordeaux, who is the head of the Assassin's Guild. So if you listen to the last episode and my comic recommendations for Gambit, you will know that she plays very, very, very heavily into Gambit's storyline. And they have an arranged marriage and all sorts of things. So it looks as though we are definitely getting the, I guess maybe not the initial origins of Gambit as a, like, a superhero. And I'll use that in, like, inverted commas, like, superhero. Because he's not always the nicest guy. He sometimes acts in his own self-interest. But, you know, it's going to be cool to see that we're going to get that backstory with the Assassin's Guild and the Thieves Guild. So, are you looking forward to this, Caitlin?
I am. I have said that I adore Channing Tatum, so I will go see Channing Tatum playing a quote-unquote superhero. So I'm totally in for it.
Yeah, again, we don't know for definite that she's going to be Belladonna, but it's almost certainly Belladonna. It's the most logical female character for her to be playing, especially as she's a French actress. So, last little bit of news, kind of going into like Suicide Squad-y kind of territory a little bit. So Margot Robbie discussed losing the Fantastic Four role to Kate Mara, and I guess she wasn't necessarily disappointed that she lost out on the role. She kind of was saying that she didn't resonate with the script. And she hasn't really gone to see the movie yet, so she doesn't know how different it is from that initial script. But she had a great meeting with Josh Trank, and it just didn't work out. So, yeah, I mean, I guess for her, she got a better role from her perspective out of it, because I guess excitement for Suicide Squad is a little bit more than Fantastic Four, which I still have not gone to see. I know I promised I'd go and see it, but things have been crazy in real life, so I still haven't been over to see it yet, but I'm definitely going to try and make a conscious effort to go and see it, because I still need to see Mission Impossible 5 as well. It's driving me crazy that I've not seen either of these movies yet, and I need to get it out of the way before, like, Spectre comes out and Star Wars and all of this stuff, because otherwise I'm never going to go and see these movies and I'll be sad. So, so sad. But yeah, we also got a group photo of the Suicide Squad cast, because they've now wrapped production. And a lot of people have been going, hey, the Joker's missing from this picture. And it is like a massive picture of all of the cast and crew and the people working behind the scenes. And like, it's all crazy. But everyone's like, where's the Joker? And I will keep shouting from the rooftops, the Joker isn't in the Suicide Squad, guys. He's not in there. That's why the Joker is probably not in this picture. I would imagine this kind of gives some credibility to the statements that I'd made previously, that we won't see him necessarily as a major driving force of the movie. We will see him in bits and pieces, and it will probably seek to set him up for some of the other movies and bring him across and link these films together. But we will see him in regard to Harley Quinn's backstory, I would imagine, rather than him being a major player. Because, again, he doesn't get involved in the ranks of the Suicide Squad. That is not his thing. Full stop. The end. That's it. So if you believed him to be missing from the Suicide Squad, he's not. He's not missing. He's just not part of the Suicide Squad. That's it. So don't worry. Don't worry about that. He will probably come back in other movies.
It's okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we have just a few brief movie-related headlines to talk about. There have been bits and pieces of the Age of Ultron gag reel released with some humorous moments, but it's just part of the gag reel that we'll get on the official DVD and Blu-ray that's coming out soon, in about a month. So you can get excited if you want to watch the bits and pieces of the gag reel that have been released. You can check them out on Hypeable. at a convention. Nathan Fillion, everybody's favorite. Nathan Fillion was asked what DC character he would like to play, and he said Booster Gold because he was Captain Hammer, and that's not a massive jump. So
it's perfect. It's like he's pretty much played the character already. That's the bottom line. He's pretty much played that character. And now that he said it, I'm like, oh my god, yes. A plus casting choice there.
A plus casting, Nathan that Fillion. Hasn't happened.
Yeah, A plus casting that hasn't happened and probably won't happen. But, you know.
But we can dream.
Yeah.
So
kudos, Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
Your fantasy casting of yourself in this role is spot on.
Your nerd cred remains intact because that was quality. Yes. If you need some Christmas decorations in September, there's going to be a new Dancing Groot pop vinyl toy. This one will be a holiday feature. Just, it's going to have very similar to last year's, just a different colored pot and bow, red and green, and Groot will be all festive for the holidays. So if you want more Dancing Groot, or if you have not gotten one yet, like I haven't, this may be the perfect opportunity for one, because Dancing Baby Groot is the best ever. And lastly, we know that Tyler Bates, who scored Guardians of the Galaxy, is returning to score Volume 2. We know pretty much next to nothing else about the movie, but we know that the composer is returning. So that's good, because music is a big deal in these movies. So yay for that.
Yeah, music is essentially its own character in Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's nice to know that Tyler Bates is coming back. Kermit Flail. Okay, so let's move on to our quotes of the week. Caitlin, do you want to go first?
Sure. So mine is more of that interview about Vixen with Megalyn Ichikunwoke. She said, "Vixen is a great black female superhero for all the brown kids who need superheroes too. I think it's really cool that the world gets the superhero because she's black, she's young, she has an interesting story, but she's still very all-American, which isn't unlike my own story, so I can relate to her, and she also inspires me." So I just think that's really fantastic and shows how important it is for everyone to have superheroes they can look up to. So loved it.
Yeah. And mine is, surprising no one, another Chris Evans quote, because he's doing a lot of press at the moment and going around and doing a lot of interviews. There's some really, really great ones that have been coming out. I think there was one by Crave that came out today that's really candid and very, very deep and really interesting. So go and check that out if you see it floating around. But this is from a different interview that he did. And he basically says, "Captain America, this is not a guy who knows what love feels like. He wants it. He thinks about it. He knows there's something missing, but it's not that he's ever tasted it." And I thought that was incredibly interesting, considering Peggy and Steve's relationship in the first Avenger and the threads that we see coming through. And I think it's really, really interesting to see how they both kind of look at that relationship. You know, Hayley Atwell has been very open about talking about her feelings about what she thinks Peggy felt about Steve. And that, you know, the TV series also kind of went along the things that, like, Steve was this great and affecting love on Peggy. And, like, Chris Evans thinks that maybe Steve was potentially on his way there, but he didn't really know that it was love. He doesn't think that it was love, at least not a true love. And the really interesting thing is both can be true. There's no, you know, from Peggy's perspective, you know, Steve Rogers could still have been this great and deep and affecting love for her, like the love of her life. And for Steve, he could have cared very, very deeply for Peggy, but it not have been a love in that very deep romantic sense that was it for him, you know? It's just so fascinating to see how everyone looks at their characters slightly differently. So I thought it was quite cool, and it gave me a lot of feelings, and ended up talking to a lot of people about my feelings, as you do. There was a lot of text messaging with Brooke, who some of you might know as the very wonderful lady behind the Not Another Teen Wolf podcast Tumblr account. Brooke and I have a lot of feelings about Captain America, so we were texting a lot about this. I was very affected by that quote this week. Okay, so winding down a little bit now, we are going to get into Comic Corner. And per request from Hannah again, we're going to be looking at some Doctor Strange comics this week. So the first one I've got for you guys is Doctor Strange Volume 1 from the Marvel Masterworks Collection. So for Doctor Strange Origins, look no further than this. It sets up everything from his dealings with the Ancient One, his relationship with long-term girlfriend Claire, and his adversary in Dormammu. It's true excitement and mysticism, and highlights Strange's strengths and unfortunate pitfalls. He's not always the nicest of men. This collection is a little on the pricey side. It's just under $100. And you can find it cheaper in the Essentials collection instead. But, and here's the big but, the art does suffer a little because the Essentials collection is printed in black and white, while Marvel Masterworks is printed in color. But when I say these books, like, they are thick. They're like, you could kill a person with this book. Genuinely. It's that heavy. The next one I've got is Doctor Strange The Oath. Yeah, I have a bit of a soft spot for Brian K. Vaughan and whatever he turns his hand to. And this run was critically acclaimed from the moment it hit shelves, and with good reason. It kind of bridges the gap seamlessly between Strange's former life as a doctor and then his role as Sorcerer Supreme, and brings to the forefront his struggle to do the right thing for the many over the one. Oh, and there's a neat little mystery as he embarks on a quest to discover who tried to murder him. So what more could you ask for? Next one I've got is Doctor Strange, A Strange Reality. So Strange Reality covers the death of Doctor Strange's mentor, the Ancient One, and his taking up the mantle following that. Shortly after, he leaves on a hunt to put a stop to a time-traveling warlock who's seeking out all of the magic throughout time in order to absorb it. As you do. Again, his internal conflict is at the forefront, and it's quite masterfully written. Next one I've got is Marvel Fanfare Volume 1, Strange Tales. And okay, this trade technically isn't isolated to Doctor Strange. You'll find everyone from Hawkeye to Daredevil in here. But the two Strange stories that are collected in here are well worth buying the anthology for. They find Doctor Strange coming up against some formidable enemies, seeking the Sorcerer Supreme title for themselves. And it shows just what Strange is capable of in his powers. And finally, I have Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom, Triumph and Torment. And this trade sees an unlikely alliance between Strange and Doom, as Doctor Strange is tasked by Vishanti to assist Doom with saving his mother from Mephisto. Whilst this is arguably a Doctor Doom story rather than a Strange one, he does still manage to carve out a place for himself and is a genuine delight through the entire run. This is often an underappreciated story for Strange and in the Marvel Universe in general, but it's thoroughly enjoyable and it kind of shows off the shades of grey that a lot of the characters operate in. And that's it. Okay, we can move into feedback. We don't have a lot this week, so this should be fairly short. I'll take the first one. Andrew was back and said, thanks for the Gambit suggestions. Also not going to bombard you with comments this week. Lol, sorry about that. And like I said on Twitter to Andrew, please don't be a stranger. We love getting comments please and we love talking to you guys. Yeah, we're absolutely okay with being bombarded. In fact, we don't necessarily see it as bombarding. We just see it as having really nice and friendly interactive discussions with you guys. So the more you comment with us, the more we can kind of react to your reactions, I guess, for the show and for what you want to hear about and all sorts. So, you know, keep them coming. I'm okay with that.
And I'm okay keep with going. That.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to take the next one? Because it was also a comment for you rather than a comment for me, like we had last week.
Amazing.
So amazing.
In response to the discussion about Powerless, which was that NBC workplace comedy set in the universe of superheroes. Jewel wrote, to me, totally agree. The older I get, the more I think about hero damage, i.e. Man of Steel, drives me nuts. And yes, oh my goodness, I'm so glad I'm not alone on this because, yeah, the older I get, the more I'm like, that is causing so much damage. So I'm just really excited about Power.
And the last one we've got is about Feige taking over the Marvel Studios on the film side is from Danielle, who has been on here before. You will have heard her on here, which, you know,
I do.
We love Danielle. but Danielle says, not sure yet because I'm not sure how many, if any, restraints Disney will have for Feige compared to Perlmutter, but less company interference is a good idea. So, again, like we were saying, there's no way of really knowing right now which way this is going to fall. So, only time will tell. And, right, let's get into question of the week. We had one response to our previous question, which was, if you could have an ultimate battle between superheroes, who would you like to see go head-to-head? And Shelby got back to us by saying, I'd like to see Bucky and Clint fight because even though Bucky's enhanced, his accuracy can't touch Clint's. I've read some fic about that. I'm not gonna lie.
Of course,
of course I have. Yeah, I find it really fascinating to explore Bucky and Clint as a friendship, just because they have similarities in terms of like trying to, I guess, being sharpshooters. Right? So it's just really, really interesting to see them play off like that and kind of put their skills up against each other. So, you know, I would like to see that come about in some way. Like, I think that would be really, really cool.
They're going to be on the same team in Civil War.
I know! I know. I'm actually really excited to see if they interact because for me, it's like a very secret, deep love of mine, Bucky and Clint. Like, yes. I'm really, really interested to see how they might interact in the movieverse. Ah, please, just more Clint. And now Caitlin was saying that she may have changed her answer from last week for this question. So do you want to go ahead and let people know what your new answer is for this?
Yes, yeah, so I don't know why this didn't come to mind sooner, but I would like to see a shoot-off between Oliver Queen and Clint Barton, because who does it better?
That would be quite interesting. I would like to see them come up against each other because they just clash. Their personalities would clash so badly. It would be brilliant. And I thought of one as well. And surprising, absolutely no one. I mean, absolutely no one is going to be shocked about this, but our theme through all of these appears to be Clint, because mine is Clint or Hawkeye and Daredevil. I would be really interested to see them come up against each other, and I'm thinking specifically about comic verse Hawkeye and Daredevil, because the fascinating thing for me would be to see them clash, but also to see where it goes from there and whether they'd team up and get along. And they're both kind of disasters of human beings, in all honesty. And they're both disabled superheroes. So I would be interested to see them come up against each other and then potentially team up. Like, I think that would be quite cool. Because if people don't know, Hawkeye is deaf in the comics. So just thought, all right, let's clarify that really, really quickly in case people don't know and you haven't read Matt Fraction's comics yet, which go! I will keep telling you until all of you tell me that you've read them. but that's it. That's it, guys. And Caitlin, do you want to give our question of the week for this week?
Sure. So in honor of the Dub Smash round two we've got going on, our question for you guys is, what song would you like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter casts to dub smash next?
I would like to see anything from the 80s, because I love 80s cheese when it comes to my music. Or I have a pretty deep love for anything by the Bare Naked Ladies. So
I love the Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I never meet anyone else who loves the Bare Naked Ladies. This is crazy. I've seen them in concert more times than I can count. Like, every time they're in the UK, I will go and see them because I have to. Like, I absolutely love them. And the thing is that they're not, like, massive, and they're not, like, this huge band, and they don't put on, like, these crazy elaborate shows. But honestly, they are probably some of the most intimate and awesome, like, concerts, like, that I've ever been to. Like, ever. Like, there's just something so fun and so dynamic and so affecting about their concerts. Like, I just love them so, so much. They're great. And they're all ridiculous. What about you? Do you have a song that you'd like to see them take on?
I would like to see them do any song from the love of my teenage life. And not going to lie, I still love them today. The Backstreet Boys. So, like, okay. I Want It That Way or something. That would be pretty much
amazing.
Oh, my
God. If one of them did Backstreet Boys and the other ones did NSYNC. Taking it to another level.
It's true. That would be, like, epic war.
It would be epic war, because then not only would you get Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. versus Agent Carter, you'd get Backstreet Boys fans versus NSYNC fans. So, up the ante, up the ante. Yeah, that's it, guys. We are done for another 2 weeks. Yeah, that was a lot of news.
We're ramping
they keep
up
us
to
busy.
The new season.
Yeah, yeah. Though, speaking of the new season, I guess I'll throw it out there. We've been contemplating potentially going weekly as the new season comes up, just because there are so many new shows getting added to the roster. If you guys would like to see, like, to see a weekly show from us, to hear a weekly show from us, I'm hoping you can't see us right now because I'm a disaster. I'm in my pajamas. That's not a sight for anyone. But if you would like to hear a weekly show from us, let us know. Because we are contemplating it at the moment, because as you can see, these episodes, as there's more things added to the superhero universe and superhero adaptions, they're getting a little bit longer and longer because there's so much ground to cover. So if you'd like to see us break it down a little bit more by going weekly, let us know. We are thinking about it right now, but I guess you guys would sway us one way or the other if you want to hear our voices more or less. So let us know. You know where we are. We're either on Twitter, at Hero Hype Podcast. Drop us a line in the comments on this post when it goes up on Hypeable.com, which will be as soon as I can possibly get it edited and up. Or, again, email us at herohypepodcast@gmail.com. And if we don't reply to you there, we will at least try and mention your email or comments on the show. So, I guess until next time, guys, goodbye. And I'm Danya.
And I am the law.
See, now I'm going to have to profess my deep and abiding love for Caitlin, because I did ask her if she could to give me a Judge Dredd impression on this episode, and she just did it, and now we're going to run away and get married, so, yeah.
I'm going to be Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Although that would be difficult, because I'd just be like, just play the whole discography. The whole thing. But yeah, until next time, guys. Bye.
Bye.